This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervy.
Good afternoon.
Actually, it's kind of evening. It's really hard to tell when it's 5 o'clock in L.A. In New York, it's evening. Good evening, New York. Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com, I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. But I am getting a lot of help today to manage your life. We have a great, great show. Later in the show, we have a legend on, Frank Marshall, film producer and director. Some amazing films he's done with Amblin Entertainment, which he co-founded with Steven Spielberg and his wife, Kathleen Kennedy. We're going to talk about his new documentary on the Bee Gees, an amazing, amazing show that you need to watch. He's the Irving Thalberg Award winner from the Academy of Motion Pictures of Arts and Science in 2018. So that's something you want to hear. And then to start off the show, we have Alex Lee, who is an amazing story. I have to use the word amazing so many times today because Alex Lee is an amazing story in and of himself. We're going to talk to Alex in a few moments. But before we do, I need to introduce my guest co-host, the beautiful, the talented, the lawyer. It's so amazing. Candace Smith is a lawyer. She's a life coach, former Miss Ohio USA. She has practiced commercial real estate law, and she has done so many other ventures. She, of course, was the right-hand woman for Patty Stanger on Millionaire Matchmaker, created Love by Candace. And I am just so happy, Candace, to have you here. I love having Candace here.
Oh, that means so much, Alan. I love being here with you every time. It's just such a pleasure.
You know, you have a lot of things that are coming up in January, and I want to hear about them. Before we get to Alex Lee, I just want to hear you tell us about how exciting January is going to be, because it's been kind of tough here,
yes,
with the pandemic and everything, but it's always nice to look forward to things.
Yes, Alan. As you know, I lost my mother recently, and for the last month, I really focused on making my new home a home and also refocusing in on work, which is my passion. You know, I'm a single woman, and so, you know, I have a lot of time on my hands. So it's like, what am I going to do? And I decided to really, really focus in on what I'm passionate about. And I've been really, really fortunate and blessed to book a guest star on True TV's Tacoma FD. It's going to be an amazing episode with a UFC fighter.
Oh, cool.
And directed by Steve Lemmy.
And you used the word amazing. That's really consistent with the show theme today. So that's Tacoma FD. And then this is something that I'm interested in. The New York Advertising Club on dating during COVID.
Yes.
You are a featured panelist.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm going to be moderating the panel, but I'm sure I will also be somewhat of a panelist. Just because I am an expert in the field. It's so exciting. We had a conference call yesterday about it, and there's going to be a lot of executives from all the dating apps out there, and we're going to be touching upon this topic that is just so prevalent when it comes to any industry.
Tough. It is very tough now, and wish you luck with that. I think that you're the perfect person to talk about dating during COVID with all your experience as a life coach and the millionaire matchmaker, of course. So we are wishing you all the best in that, and we have to wish Alex Lee a congratulations. This is an amazing story. Yes. Alex Lee now represents California's 25th Assembly District. He was recently elected and he was sworn in on December 7th. His district covers areas in Fremont, San Jose, and the Bay Area, a little bit north of here. But his story is one of an incredible life story, and he's only 25 years old, half the age of most of his peers. He is California's first Gen Z lawmaker. He's a lot of firsts. First bisexual member of the, openly bisexual openly. Member of the legislature, Asian. He is a immigrant, son of immigrant from Hong Kong. He become in a very heavy Asian area, and his victory is just incredible. He was probably outspent about 15-1, and he still won. He knocked on like 30,000 doors, had 72% of the vote, was endorsed by Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang from Brown University. I always have to mention my alma mater, Andrew Yang, of course. Alex Lee, congratulations and welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hey, thank you so much for that amazing and wonderful introduction. I'm proud to be here.
I love the fact you're using the word of the day. This must be something for you that you would not have believed. You were quite involved in student politics as student body president at UC Davis. So you have a background, but did you ever think you would be now sitting in the legislature in California?
Well, you know what? All the way up until our election day, we didn't know that we were going to win because we were up against so many odds, being outspent, being out-endorsed. But we really just had a really grassroots progressive message, and I think that resonated with folks. So, you know, even today, a week after I was sworn in and even introduced my first bill, I'm still pinching myself and thinking, wow, this is pretty surreal. So it's pretty amazing to be able to be here and be an assembly member for my home district.
You know, you started running, and I'm really intrigued by the first bill that you were involved with. Tell us a little bit about that. What was your second day on the job and what it involved?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually the first day on the job. We introduced a bill maybe an hour and a half after being sworn in. And it's Assembly Bill 12. It is a bill to do two things. It will build a publicly financed election system to empower everyday folks to be able to donate and contribute to candidates that they like for, you know, for local offices, as well as banning corporate special interest money in our democracy. Because fundamentally, I think the inordinate amount of money that comes from corporate special interest is really detrimental to our democracy, and we have to be addressing it head on in the legislature. Because personally, I'm a candidate that has sworn off money from all corporations, as well as developers, fossil fuel, and a lot of other sources, because I believe
police as well.
Yes, there's police unions as well. Yes, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because last week we had on the show Martin Garbus, who's a legendary trial lawyer, and he talked about the worst decision that is affecting this country, and that was Citizens United. When you think about the Citizens United case, how does your bill confront that, and how do you get around Citizens United?
Well, yeah, well, definitely Citizens United is one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of this country. You know, it gave so many rights to corporations in the political spending arena that have been so detrimental to modern democracy that we're still feeling the effects of it today. So this bill, AB 20, works within the confines of that. We are banning corporations from donating to candidates, and that is actually not a novel or radical idea. In fact, that conforms California to the federal standard. So Congress members, even presidential candidates, can't take money directly from corporations. And 22 other states have similar laws on the books. So this at least allows us to address money within the confines of Citizens United, however narrow it's becoming, but we need to be ahead of it as much as possible.
I know that there's so many daunting tasks ahead of you. How do you keep your head on straight when you have, you know, basically the whole country, the whole state in front of you, and you're 25 years old? Isn't it intimidating to walk in and to start talking about things like Citizens United and so many of the other, you know, the preserving affordable housing? That's not a little matter. And it's tough to do, especially from someone, a progressive like you, who is going to naturally come up against a lot of opposition for progressive ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly daunting of a task, right? I definitely signed up for this job knowing the challenges we're going to be facing. And I'm going to be real with you, is every, you know, thing we're advocating for is going to be tough. It's going to take a lot of culture shift, a lot of work, but I'm prepared to put in that work, even if it means working 10 times as hard as traditionally people would do in this job. I'm also motivated to do it because, you know, especially when it comes to all these issues, especially with affordable housing, it's something so deeply personal to me. In fact, the only reason I can live in the Bay Area, which is infamously expensive, is because I'm able to live with my family. It's mm-hmm. the only way, even as a working professional, to make it economically work. And I'm lucky and privileged to be able to do that. But there are so many people who are thinking, well, maybe it's just not worth it, right? And they move away, or even worse, is they lose their home and they become homeless, or they have to move out of the area entirely. And that is so much, it is like the story of my area, of my district, and everyone is feeling the housing crisis right now. And that's why it must be one of the first pressing things we address. And it's even getting worse during the pandemic, right, when people are losing their jobs.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
Losing their loved ones. It's created this whole new sense of urgency for me. And knowing that real lives are at stake in, you know, in California, we are the size of a country of our own. We have 40 million people. It's so important to be putting that work in. And as scary as it often can be, I know the work is worth it and it needs to be done.
Alex, this is Candace, and I just want to say I really admire how much of an advocate you've been for the homeless. I spent a lot of time with the Downtown Women's Center in Los Angeles, and I am curious in particular, you suggest mixed use and mixed income housing to address the issues with the rising cost of housing in California. Could you elaborate a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, addressing homelessness is key to also fixing the housing crisis. So in the perfect world, especially when we're developing and creating more housing, it should be mixed income and it should be mixed use as much as possible. And that simply means people of all income strata and income levels can live together. So we don't have racially or income segregated neighborhoods that unfortunately do still exist in California and this country. You know, we shouldn't have enclaves for the rich and enclaves and places cordoned off for the poor. That's not how it should be in America. So hopefully going forward, we'll have a lot more programs and funding to be able to build more housing for teachers, our nurses, and everyday working professionals of all income levels to be living together in vibrant communities. But it's also great, and something I've been championing locally, especially too, is something called Project Broomkey, is using state resources to basically transform underutilized motels or hotels, which especially now during the pandemic is quite prevalent, and turning those into permanent supportive housing for unhoused folks. So that literally can end homelessness for hundreds of folks. And I'm so glad that some of my cities have stepped up and working on these projects, because at one time, you know, with the underutilized hotel, you could end homelessness for, in my district, at least, it was over 140 people at one time.
Wow.
So it's really important to be able to working on these projects and delivering for these folks.
Hey, Alex.
Yes.
I was just going to say, have you checked your driver's license lately? I mean, are you really 25 years old? I mean, these topics, it sounds like, you know, you've had so much experience and, you know, you have such a great handle on it. You're on a couple of committees now, transportation, privacy, yep. consumer affairs, budget, education, and rules. How did that happen? And how, we only have another couple of minutes, but I just want to know how you were so quick to get on these committees and what you plan to do with them.
Well, I'm definitely very flattered that he knows so much about me already. So it's really awesome. But, I think it's owed to two things. One is that my professional career has been working as a legislative staffer for the state legislature. So it was my job to work behind the scenes, work on policy. I've even had bills signed by the governor before that I've helped write.
You know, we want to hear more, and we'd love to have you back. You know, even to bring someone on to talk to you about, have a little debate about the progressive issues that you're pursuing versus what some people would consider some areas that are just not being addressed, which you're looking at. And we take our hats off to you for that. And hopefully we can get you back on when you've had an opportunity to really make an impact, and I'm sure you will. Congratulations again, Alex. It's Alex Leon. And your Twitter feed is amazing. Give me your Twitter handle so we can get that out to the folks.
Yeah, currently my username on Twitter is @VoteAlexLee2020.
Yeah, and you're going to have to change that, by the way, because we're done with the vote. So when you get that new, you'll go and announce your new Twitter handle. It's Assembly Member Alex Lee representing California's 25th Assembly District. Good luck, and
all
thanks for being with us, Alex, on Gervie's Law.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, take care. We're going to be right back. When we come back, we're going to talk to Frank Marshall, the legend.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Well, I think the glass is full today. What a show. Candace Smith is with me. She's my guest co-host. She's former Miss Ohio USA, law degree from Northwestern, and a life coach. Wasn't it exciting having Alex Lee on, the youngest assembly member in California history, 25 years old?
Yes, and it's always a pleasure to be here. You inspire me, and let me tell you, Alex Lee just inspired me and impressed me in a way that I honestly didn't even expect.
Yeah, he's really together, and we wish him all the good luck as he embarks on, I expect, a long career. And perhaps he will be a legend in California. And that's what we're talking about, legends. Last week, we had trial attorney Martin Garbison, who is legendary in his own right, talking about a lot of the famous cases that he's been involved with. Next week, just a little plug here, and there's a reason for the plug. There's actually some meaning to it. Jillian Barbary is going to be my guest co-host. And we're going to have celebrity divorce attorney Laura Wasser on, who is often called the Disso Queen. The Disso Queen. And you're looking at me, Candace, like it's a strange face.
What does that mean?
Well, we're going to find out. You listen to the show next week. You'll find out about dissolution of marriage, a celebrity style, the Disso Queen. But let's talk about a little bit, maybe about disco, the Disco Queen. You were in the disco era, weren't you?
I mean, I was born in 77, but I love disco. When I studied at the University of London, I frequented the 70s clubs, like in Covent Garden, and I saw Saturday Night Fever on West End.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I love 70s.
And we are going to hear from a legend himself right now. Legendary film producer and director Frank Marshall was one of the founders of Amblin Entertainment with Steven Spielberg and, of course, his lovely wife, Kathleen Kennedy. He then founded the Kennedy Marshall Film Production Company, has had so many huge hits over the years, received 5 Oscar nominations for The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Seabiscuit, The Sixth Sense, The Color Purple, and Raiders of the Lost Ark, has won the Irving G. Thalberg Award from the Academy of Motion Pictures of Arts and Sciences. That was in 2018, something that no couple had ever won before, a married couple, and it was presented by Steven Spielberg, his buddy. And probably the greatest line from that was when Steven Spielberg talked about seeing the two of them, Kathleen and Frank, making out on his couch. That's a story in and of itself. What a great speech that was. And you know, Frank Marshall has had a part in so many huge hits, Jason Bourne series, Jurassic World, all of these, Indiana Jones, all of these shows. And now to come out with this documentary, which is phenomenal. The documentary is called The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? There you go, Candace. There's the connection with the Disso Queen. And the reviews have been incredible. 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Frank Marshall, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all that. I wanted to add another connection to the law side of things. I majored and got my degree at UCLA in political science, and I was going to go to law school. So who knows? You know, I took a left turn instead of a right turn and ended up in the movies, but, you know, I might have been a lawyer. So
it's funny because we're always looking for that legal connection, Frank. And I thought you were going down the road of the soccer, talking about starting the first NCAA soccer team at UCLA. But apparently there was also some interest in going into law as well. Quite a college experience.
Yeah. You know, it was the 60s and it was a great time to be, in your 20s. And I come from a musical family, so I had that background as well, which really led me to the disco area, and the Bee Gees.
You know, when you talk about your background, being the son of a guitarist, conductor, composer, Jack Marshall, this must have been a labor of love, especially since, you know, Steven Spielberg talked about, he made jokes about your musical background, Dr. Fantasy, DJ Master Frank. So this is something that may be a little bit different than some of the fantasy movies that you've done when you're talking about something that really hit home with you, literally.
Yeah, this was really a labor of love, a passion project. I've loved music. I guess I had a guitar in my hands since I can remember. And, you know, it was really interesting to me when this all came about. It was kind of fate. It was kind of being in the right place at the right time. I was at Capitol Records building there on Vine and Hollywood Boulevard. 4 years ago, meeting with Steve Barnett, who was the president of Capitol Records, and he had just refurbished the building. And I remember being in that building with my dad
wow.
in the 50s and the 60s, sitting around listening to great music. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, what could we do together? And he said, well, I just bought the catalog of the Bee Gees. And I went, wow. You know, and that was a family unit. You know, I'm the oldest. I have two brothers. Barry and I are actually only 13 days. He's 13 days older than me.
Oh, he's an old man.
Yeah, he's...
Compared to you.
So it all made sense to me. You know, here I can take all these years of experience and things and, you know, really put them into a passion project. And what's different about making a doc as opposed to my day job is that you never know where it's going to go. There's all these hidden, you know, gems and exciting moments that you discover. Whereas when you're making a movie like Jurassic World, you know what you're doing every day. You've got a script, you've got a budget, you've got a schedule. I really love the free form of making this doc and talking to people and discovering these treasure troves of archives and the 8mm footage. And, you know, things like Barry told me he never read the script for Saturday Night Fever. I just wow. find that insane. you know,
how's that possible? I mean, that was it was iconic.
I know. It was, again, it was just the serendipity of it all. They were in the chateau and outside of Paris, which they thought was going to be great. And it was a dump. But they were forging ahead. They were creating an album. They had five tunes already laid down, sort of in their minds. And Stigwood called up and said, "Hey, I need some songs." And Bill Oakes, who's in the movie, said, "You know, I need some songs for this movie I'm doing with John Travolta." And they said, "Okay, how about these?" And they sent him five songs, and we have the tape of that. It's just, you know, those are the things that are so wonderful when you're making a doc, those little treasures.
And when you think about the songs from Saturday Night Live, and Candace, you may remember it because you were a little young, but More Than a Woman, How Deep Is Your Love, If I Can't Have You, Night Fever, and Staying Alive, those are classic songs. And, you know, Frank, your daughters are probably maybe not interested. They're young, and they probably don't remember the disco movement. But
no.
If they hear those songs, doesn't it get them going? Like, I mean, it's a whole new generation that can get introduced to songs like that through Saturday Night Live.
No, that was kind of the mission, you know, I have to admit, Alan, was that to introduce a new audience, but also reintroduce the audience that remembers them mm-hmm. and show that it wasn't just Saturday Night Fever. So when, you know, a couple of years ago when I was right in the middle of everything, we did all our interviews in 2019,
mm-hmm.
I would be playing things around the house and I'd say, you know, who do you think did this? It was like Islands in the Stream. They'd go, "Oh, Kenny Rogers." They go, no, the Bee Gees. They go, "What?" And then, you know, then I'd play Saturday Night Fever, or I play Staying Alive, and they go, "Oh, God, we love that." I said, "Well, that's the Bee Gees." You know, these songs are in the zeitgeist, and, you know, it was really about celebrating their legacy,
and
so people know.
I feel like that genre of music has, I don't know, had a resurgence. I mean, my favorite nightclub mm-hmm. in America is in Chicago, and it's called Disco. And, you know, it plays 70s music, and it's just, it's kind of a lifestyle kind of party. Right. I don't know.
Well, I think that if you ask any wedding DJ what are the songs that are on everybody's list, it's Staying Alive and probably September from Earth, Wind & Fire.
Mm-hmm. Right, but right.
It's definitely Staying Alive, and then they go from there. I mean, you know, it's just in the history of pop music, they wrote over 1,000 songs. Come on. It's incredible. And when you see the process, when I started getting into it with Barry, you know, and he'd say, well, yeah, we wrote that, you know, when the lights went out, we sat on the steps, and in about 10 minutes we wrote Mining Disaster. And I said, Barry, don't tell people that.
Right.
We all think that all this time, you know, and angst and, you know, reworked lyrics and everything, said, but the songs just came to them.
You know, Frank, you're telling me this, and I'm listening, and it's bringing back the vision from the film when Barry's talking about jive talking and how that came to him, driving over a bridge and hearing the clicking, 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 and all of a sudden he's singing in his head this new song that became such a radical departure, I think, from a lot of what they had been doing with that kind of, I don't know, do you call it a clicking from the bridge? I don't know what it was, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, exactly, because you never know where the creative storm comes from, and that's what I loved about talking to Barry, and he was very gracious and always humble and very reflective, and, you know, obviously he really misses his brothers. And he wants people to know that they were part of this. Their contribution and their collaboration was what made this work. It wasn't just him.
You know, when you say he misses his brothers, and of course, the two of them, the twins, both have passed away. And he said something like, if he could have them back, he would give back all of the gold records and all of the, you know, accolades.
Same. Fame and money.
Fame.
Yeah, I mean, that's really heartbreaking to hear that.
No, it was, I have to say, you know, it's an emotional journey. And he's the last man standing. And I think it's just kind of wonderful that he was able to reflect and look back. And as he says, these are his memories. And Robin and Morris would have had their own. But my hope is that I was able to go back and find interviews that they had done where people asked Robin and Morris the same questions I was asking Barry. And so I did get a full, hopefully, representation of what it was like to create all that incredible music together.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that. We got to take a break, but I want to talk about some of the interviews, including the archived ones with both Morris and Robin, and how important it was to the film. We're going to talk more to Frank Marshall after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. You know, this is bringing back so many memories. I remember as a kid, I was a young kid when the Bee Gees were big, and I was really into dancing. Candace, can you picture me at parties? They were house parties, and I was like 12 or 13 years old, and I would be doing all of this kind of, you know, madly gesticulation from the Bee Gees with the music in the background.
I mean, can't envision it, and I believe you stood out.
I did.
I do. I believe that.
I can certainly remember things like dancing slow to More Than a Woman, with probably the first time I ever danced slow with a woman. Actually, a girl.
A shadow? A woman?
It wasn't a shadow. It was a girl. We're talking to Frank Marshall. The movie's called The Bee Gees. How can you mend a broken heart? I just want to tell the viewers, the listeners, actually, to check out all of the reviews of this movie. I mean, it is one of the most well-reviewed movies. And I have to say, you've had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, Frank. I think it was Boston. But this is pretty close.
Yeah, I have to say that it's really amazing. You know, and I'm humbled by the response. It's been incredible.
Yeah, I want to just say, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was good. You interrupted my beautiful rendition of all of these reviews.
What I'll say is that in this incredible weird time we're living in, you know, for me, what I love is to go to the movie theater and enjoy what the audience. I mean, we make our movies for the audience. And being there is my most enjoyable moment when they're responding to the movie. And not being able to have that today, I'm now realizing that the reviews are sort of, you know, filling that void. And it's so great that people are enjoying and appreciating what we tried to do to, you know, introduce and reintroduce the Bee Gees and what an incredible impact they have had on pop music. I mean, amazing.
That's such an important point, and I really appreciate you saying it. You know, looking at a silver lining, we're just, you know, so broken down with everything going on. And to think that, you know, when you can hear the reviews and hear that people have really enjoyed the film, beautifully done and made by veteran producer and filmmaker Frank Marshall, it is explicitly about music, its creation, the impact of fame, and the complex emotional tides when the family works together. That's from the Globe and Mail and Toronto. How deep is your love for the Bee Gees? It's bound to grow after watching Frank Marshall's illuminating movie biography. That's from the TV Insider. One of the best documentaries yet about music, fame, and a jagged life that can accompany it, by Jim Shembri. And the joyous nature of the music is offset by the melancholy tone of the film, which makes a pretty convincing case that the Bee Gees were underappreciated and in some quarters disproportionately vilified. That's from CNN's Brian Lowry. Talk about that a little bit, about disproportionately vilified, because I was never, and I don't know about you, Candace, but I was never one of those people who ever turned on the Bee Gees. I loved the music and I appreciated it. And even as we got out of the disco era, I still had these memories and I still had to tap my feet when I heard songs like Night Fever and, you know, How Deep Is Your Love and all the others.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that, Alan. And what's interesting is, though, that even when you liked the music, you thought they were kind of lightweights, you know, because of how they presented themselves back then. And, you know, that was right out of the movie. And that was part of what happened, that there was sort of this wave that occurred that, you know, happened back then, as I think Chris Martin says, that these groups that were on the front of global super pop stardom.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that, you know, it's great to be at the top, but you can easily, you know, they want to knock you off the top as quickly as you got there. And I think that what was really interesting to me was that they were heavyweights. They weren't lightweight. And so we tried to show why they were heavyweights. And it was really, you know, their artistry, their resilience. How about their comebacks? They kept coming back. They kept, you know, that was amazing to me.
Yeah.
How they just kind of adapted and reformed into something else because they loved to make music together.
And they were just so likable.
And that was part of the family thing. When you see those photos of them in Miami, there weren't like 10 of them. There were 50 of them.
Mm-hmm.
All three families were there. They went from boys to men. And, you know, and they discovered that, you know, going out on your own wasn't a good idea.
No.
But then, they each had their own families, and then they all went to Miami, including mom and dad and then Andy. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah, I know that my memories of the Bee Gees has always been of a very likable, family-oriented group with music that just made me feel good. You know, it just made me really, really happy. And what I really love about the documentary, Frank, is you including the interviews of Noel Gallagher and Nick Jonas just to shed a little bit more light on what it's like for siblings, creative siblings, to be collaborating with one another and how that can kind of cause some deep-rooted issues.
Yeah, we actually did some research, and we on Brothers, because, you know, they asked me for my producers, who Nigel Sinclair and Jeannie Festen and Mark Monroe, asked me for a list of people I'd like to talk to. And I wanted to talk to Brothers in bands, and it was incredible that we put together this list and everybody wanted to talk.
But yeah,
we found that groups of family groups of brothers that have extreme fame, like the Bee Gees had, none of them survived past 30, except for the Bee Gees.
Wow.
Why is that?
Yeah, how about that? Well, I don't know, because, you know, you see them, they went from boys to men. You know, when you turn 20 and suddenly there's, you know, you feel your own individual oats.
Yeah.
And there's money and fame and women, and you think you can do it on your own, but you don't realize until later that, you know, the parts together is better than the single. And they realize that, and they can't, you know, being a family, you have to come back together at Christmas and sit across the table over the turkey and realize, oh, that kind of worked, and maybe we should get back together. So they kind of grew up together, but it was their unique combination of their voices and their creativity that kept them together. And then the family thing of them all being there in Miami is why they made it past 30.
You know, it's interesting, Frank, you may have just answered your own question when you talked about how they were the brothers that made it past, you know, 30 or whatever age. Maybe it was talent. Maybe it was the ability to, as I say in the film, mesh. I think it was Noel Gallagher who talks about them meshing their voices together, sounding like one voice, but individually, they were, you know, definitely so talented. The falsetto that it's talked about in the film is something that you don't hear. You know, when you hear falsetto, it's always fake. Mm-hmm. With them, it wasn't. It was music.
Yeah, and it came naturally. And I, you know, when I asked Barry, I said, well, you know, where did this all come from, the harmonies and the falsetto and all that? You must have studied music when you were in Brisbane, and you know, did your dad and mom, you know, give you music lessons and vocal lessons? And he said, no, we just, you know, dad played us the Mills Brothers and the Everly Brothers. And, you know, Robin and I kind of found this harmony, two-part harmony. And then Morris would just come in and drop in the third-part harmony. And it worked. And I went, you're kidding. You know, that just doesn't happen. It was this natural gift that they had as brothers. And that's what developed and then, you know, got them through all of these different decades that they were in that they adapted to. Plus the songwriting. It wasn't just Barry. They all contributed to the songwriting. And I think that's what makes them unique.
You know, it wasn't all positive, though. And, you know, through the film, you see the disharmony. And I'm using your word harmony, but there was also disharmony. How did that make you feel when you're making this, you're directing this film, this documentary, talking to Barry, obviously getting to know him quite well, and looking at the archived footage? How did it make you feel when you had to address the disharmony that ultimately occurred throughout their careers?
Well, you know, Barry was incredibly humble and gracious and reflective when I talked to him. And I said, look, you know, there were great triumphs and great ups, but there were also downs, and there were a lot of obstacles that were thrown into you in front of you guys, and that's life. This is a story about life. It's a story about families. It's a story about brothers. And I said, I gotta tell the, you know, there, I gotta tell the dark side as well. You know, it's that journey that they took for 5 decades through the changing taste, the changing styles, and all of the things that came together for them when even there were low points. I mean, they all went through their low points, which is also about families and life. And, wow. You know, they were tested by their fame. They were tested by their losses. But in the end, they were a family, and it was about love. And you know, he loves his brothers. He loves the family. And that kind of triumphed everything.
But there's a lesson. There's a lesson there too, Frank. And I think Barry makes it clear that, you know, with the death of his brother, especially the first death with Morris, or was it Robin? I'm sorry. He felt that it wasn't necessary, you know, when he reflected back that, you know, love your family. Get beyond the little things that are bugging you and that were tearing you apart, because when it's over, it's over.
Yeah. You know, and it was really about the brotherhood, about the family, the creativity, and the joy and the tragedy. I mean, we're all going to have, it's life. We all have ups and downs, and it's about persevering and adapting and getting through them, and that's what they did.
And I think that's what the movie speaks to. We have one short segment, one more. Can we keep you a little bit longer, Frank? Is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. We appreciate it. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right, we're back. That's some familiar music. You
it
heard
definitely
that one?
Is.
You've heard it before?
Yeah, I remember that. Some John Williams thing.
Is that what it was? How did you, you know, and I don't want to backtrack too much, but, you know, when we're talking about the Bee Gees and the How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, a documentary, but look back in your past and all of the amazing, iconic movies that you've been part of. It all started, what, being an apprentice with Peter Bogdanovich? Like, how did it go this way where, and then, of course, meeting your wonderful wife, Kathleen Kennedy, and look at it now. Look at these movies that I have a 6 and 7 year old. They love watching, you know, they're seeing E.T. and they're starting over again. My son loves Star Wars and all of these movies. Back to the Future. And they love that movie too. My kids, 6 and 7 years old. It must be so gratifying.
No, it's incredible. You know, I'm blessed. I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to have, you know, been part of all of that. And I'll give you one other incredible, amazing connection. John Williams was in the Army band back in the 40s with my dad. So I grew up with Johnny Williams in our house coming over. And he was a piano player. And my dad was the guitarist. And so, you know, to have that theme you just played be the theme really of my life, I have to say Raiders was, you know, when people ask me what movie do I love, you know, is my favorite movie, it's got to be Raiders. You know?
Me too.
My first, I mean, you know, incredible success, incredible movie. My first movie with George and Steven. I met Kathy. I probably should have led with that. You know, my first sole producer credit, my first nomination, you know, I, there's just so many firsts on that one. And then to have John Williams do that theme that everybody loves and knows, and the minute you start to sing it, you think of Indiana Jones. So, you know, music has been a part of my life. since I can remember, and I'm so happy to be able to now kind of combine everything into my passions and loves and deliver a family story. So, yeah, it's been an incredible ride.
You know, it's funny because you talk about the themes of the past and talking about these movies. But when Matt Damon was talking about you, he was saying that you've had one of the greatest careers in Hollywood. But most importantly, he talked about a theme that a lot of people don't realize. And he said, more importantly, you, Frank Marshall, and Kathleen Kennedy are two of the best human beings he's ever met. That's some high praise, best human beings. How is it possible to be in this industry for so long and still be called two of the best human beings that Matt Damon has ever met, and I'm sure others as well?
Well, I think it comes from how we grew up, to be honest. I mean, Kathy grew up in Redding, California. She grew up in a normal life. I grew up in the Valley in Newport Beach. I grew up in kind of a normal life. I didn't know I was going to go into the movie business. I loved entertaining. I loved playing guitar. I didn't know how movies got made. And I think it's because we appreciate what people do to contribute to the support of the vision that we're trying to create. And we become a family on the movie. And we appreciate that. And so we grew up in a really kind of normal world. And I think that's been really important to us, to be able to collaborate with people and celebrate the people that work with us, because we all are, you know, together in creating these storytelling these stories and creating these movies.
Yeah.
You know, I love that Maddie said that, but I love working with these people. I love being their friends. I love, you know, we're like family. When we go to do a movie, we're family. So you take care of your family.
Right. You know,
and I'm in a position now where I can take care of people I'm telling you, a better product comes out of it than being a taskmaster. You know, or somebody who doesn't support that.
Absolutely. We gotta end it there. I'm sorry, Candace, but it's such beautiful words that you've said and something to live by. And I hope all our listeners think about what Frank Marshall just told us. Really important. And that's where success comes from. Family and respecting others, taking the responsibility to do a good job. The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart on HBO. Is how can people see it? Everyone has to. Anyone who loves music or loves documentaries or just loves movies has to see this movie. How can they do it?
They can do it on HBO, HBO Max, and around the world. It's on all kinds of other things like Sky and who knows. And hopefully we'll be in the theaters this summer.
All right. Well, we hope so. I'll be the first one in line. Frank Marshall, thanks so much for being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Great to talk to you, Al and Candace.
Thank you.
And happy
okay,
holidays.
good luck and happy holidays to
happy
you too,
holidays.
Candace Smith.
Yay.
What a pleasure!
Thank
I
you,
love it,
Alan. Really an honor to be with you.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.